This is Zach Sicardi, Senior Outreach Coordinator for Stony Brook University's Department of Recycling and Resource Management. Did you know that for every ton of plastic we recycle, we save a ton of oil, we save the equivalent of two people's energy use for a whole year, and we save the amount of water used by one person over 2 months' time? In the interest of our natural resources and in winning the nationwide Recyclemania tournament, please do your part in recycling all of your bottles and cans.
And it's just about 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's Tuesday evening. It's time for Off the Wall.
We'll be right back.
And we're here.
Yeah.
In our new home.
Yes, we are.
You fumbling with the microphone, Kyle?
I hate it already.
Well, there are some issues. There are some issues with space. I mean, we keep knocking into things. But, you know, we can move things around. We can move things around. There's table space for me to read my notes, but it's on the other side of the room. That's the only problem.
I can dim the lights, which apparently makes it so you can't read.
Yeah, how does that help? Exactly.
Yeah.
It's nice to dim the lights, but I'm not looking to take a nap.
It's one or the other in this studio.
But, you know, we're here, and we're happy we're here, and it's great, and things are... The machines are certainly working well.
Yeah, I guess so. I sound funny. I think that's just me.
Yeah, that's how you sound.
Really?
Yeah.
That's sad.
Well, now you know. It's good to know.
That's the worst. How are you? I'm in an okay mood. I'm kind of in a funny mood.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
No, not one of those.
Not that kind of mood.
But not like a...
It snowed today, Kyle. How could you be in a bad mood? It snowed.
That's just it. Like, I feel okay. I'm not in like a sickly, like, I feel a flu coming on. But the snow cheered me up a lot. And then reality stepped back in, and I wasn't able to enjoy it as much. Does that feel about right?
It sounds like what the whole country is going through right now.
It was short-lived. It was joy. I remember what joy was, and it resembled that.
Can I just say, as the last notes of the new Philip Glass theme fade out, that today is Philip Glass's 80th birthday. Did you know that?
I might have.
Well, I did mention it to you earlier.
Yeah, you did. I can't lie, but happy birthday, Philip Glass.
And he's apparently giving a concert tonight at Carnegie Hall, debuting some new music, which is what you do when you're a musician.
Wow.
You never stop.
Yeah, well, got to keep busking.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes.
Get that spare change coming in.
Yep.
But yes, it's been crazy on the local level. It's been crazy on the national level as well. Let's start with the local level because that's a little bit more optimistic and positive and uplifting.
How national? Like really, really serious national?
Yes,
like,
sir,
like
as serious.
I am sewing my own clothing on behalf of all the pride I have in my nation?
No, not that kind of...
Oh.
Not that kind, not this week. But let's get to that. Let's get to that. We said goodbye to our old studio last week, and then we continued to say goodbye to it throughout the course of the week and weekend because we had to get everything out of there, salvage the things that we wanted to save.
Wasn't that fun?
That was, yeah, fun. Fun is in there.
Well, I can tell you why I had fun.
Fun is in there. It's one of the words, for sure. But, wow, we were both aching for days afterwards just with all the moving around, lifting, and just nonstop activity. But, you know, we had to do it. We had to say goodbye to the place. Not just the studio, the entire building, the entire Union building, which now is off limits. We can't get into it anymore. It was emotional walking around there for the last time, those hallways. I realized, you know, I spent more time in that building than any house I have ever lived in my life. Because the first time I stepped in that building was 1977, and, you know, every show I did was from that place, and certainly a lot of production was done from there, and just all kinds of other activities that took place in that building as well. So to see it go, it'll be rebuilt in a couple of years, I guess, but it won't be the same. It was very emotional, and also just a lot of hard work to get things out of there, heavy tape machines that some people might say are junk. Others might say, wow, this is a real collector's item, we should save that. Moving records, record cabinets, the board, the studio boards. People don't think about this. We're using a completely different equipment now. We use what's known as sliders. Everyone uses sliders these days.
Yes.
We didn't realize this last week.
Or faders.
Last week we did our last show in our lives with using knobs. Using, you know, potentiometers,
rotary.
And I didn't realize that at the time. I probably turned my last knob.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Wow. Since you made me realize I have you here in a captive moment now that you're talking about this, what's your fondest memory of that building and working there for so long?
I have a lot of fond memories. lots of mischief. Lots of meeting new people in various places. I mean, there were, you know, movies shown downstairs in the auditorium. We held the alternative presidential convention in 1984, I believe. Do I have that right? I think it was 1984. I should know. I'm one of the coordinators. We did that in the same auditorium. There was a university cafe, where people had concerts later on. Before that, there were other gathering places like the Radio Night House and
you
Tokyo Joe's and all sorts of other places.
You know what? And it's funny, as you're saying this, I'm thinking those are all things that don't have anything to do with a radio station, but what is the connective tissue for that? It's the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's that radio is the community on campus and in general. So
it should be. And now that 107.3 is on the air, the whole campus can hear us loud and clear, because it's important to have that community.
Yeah. And so the one consistent thing about the space and how it is used and brings people together is the board. And the particular board that had been used there forever had, I don't know, how many years in service? It must have been 50?
Okay.
60?
It was put in place sometime in the 70s, before the station went on the air as FM, because the station was carrier current before that, 8:20 a.m., and it just reached a couple of places on campus, not even the whole campus. But it was run professionally, and in fact, it received record service. Records would be sent to us from the record company. So we had a full library by the time we actually went on the air, June 27th, 1977. So that is an achievement right there. Those boards, though, they were workhorses, because they stayed in operation from that period until last week. And, yeah, there was a lot wrong with them in the end. All kinds of things were breaking. But I dare say they lasted a lot longer than anything that is made nowadays. Check in 40-some-odd years afterwards and see what's around that was made today.
Yeah, it's made by a company, Harris Company, or Gates, also made a lot of the parts inside of the board.
Yes.
And that's a famous radio and audio and electronics company, and made a lot of really industrial equipment like that. It didn't go quietly, I'll tell you that.
Well,
we did see our two first. They're identical.
Let me just explain, because when you're building a new radio station, you don't really have time to deal with the old radio station with all the equipment there. So if you had not stepped in, and if people like our operations director Mike or Kibret, who is an incredible carpenter and reggae programmer and just all around great guy, who were able to step in and say this board has to be saved. These boards have to be saved. They easily could have just been left there for the demolition of the building.
And it's a little counterintuitive, because they're installed there,
uh-huh.
But you have to realize it as separate from the disposable and consumable things like wires and old wood furniture that's going to go anyway.
Yeah, CD players, things like that.
But once you get the right spirit and people have the idea, and this is after all the other moves, a lot of helping other people, just final cabinets, really things that you cannot really justify throwing out in any way.
And plus we were using it up to the end.
Exactly. All of that was done, and we had our last show there, the cutover. We're really the last couple creatures that were in this building, and so we were tasked with helping with some of the loose ends and remaining things in the technical closet and some of the stuff the chief engineer Frank was working on. But these consoles were installed, and kind of sitting there staring at us, and the idea was, okay, how do we take them out? So I think it was a day before the cutover. No, the night of the cutover, I helped with the production room board, which was known as CR2.
Yes.
And that console is similar to CR1. They're identical. It's a Harris board as well, with the rotary levels or faders.
Yes.
And really a heavy, sturdy piece of equipment.
Cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
It takes two people to lift it up.
Very, very, I don't know, how do I say, old kind of industrial feel.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just really solid. A lot of very carefully crafted wire pathways. The inside's very intricate, the way it's all put together, and it kind of is a time capsule in and of itself, just the way things are made and laid out.
But you were the person determined to take the one in CR2 apart, and you did. It took hours to do that, and it was weird watching it being dismantled, but we got it. We saved it, and then the next day we tackled the other control room, the on-air control room, which we had to use up until the last minute, literally, and they both have been saved. They both will be... I don't know if restored is the right word, but put in a state where they can be appreciated.
Yeah.
They could work. They could operate. But I think the best thing they could do right now is just be on display so people can see where radio history was made.
Yeah, yeah. And really all we did is undo some screws that were holding them down. Actually, CR1 didn't have any screws. And then we just basically clipped wires in the back and around and then carefully sort of unscrewed and lifted the thing.
And then after all that was over, this is when things got really crazy, because all of a sudden Kibrit shows up out of nowhere, and he is the one guy that can do this, literally tear down the walls, because as I mentioned, he's a carpenter and he can just do incredible things, and he had the spirit to just get the job done no matter what it took. Now, why rip down the walls? Because there were rumors. There were rumors that... many years ago, when this place was built, things were hidden in the walls by the people who built them. Yeah.
Sort of
a time capsule, right?
Yeah, it's something during the build-up of the station that people remember as having been someone's idea, and that this stuff had been little memorabilia, little mementos during the building of the station.
Mm-hmm.
So to sort of complete that arc of history and lore, we figured it was on us to find these mementos for the station, as opposed to having the relics as it were to sort of go down with the station as the building is destroyed.
We didn't know where they were exactly. We didn't know what they were. They were rumors that somebody put a joint in the wall.
That was part of it, yeah.
You know, a marijuana joint in the wall back in the 1970s. And, you know, that was the only thing I really heard about. Maybe there was a record in there or something as well. I kind of figured we'd just find a box that had all this stuff in
it. Yeah, I was thinking of a small box, too, or container.
Ripped down wall after wall and searching through insulation and sheetrock. And... then we started asking some old staff members. We had Jim Wiener on the phone at one point, and he was giving us advice as to where to look.
Yeah, a lot of them have been helping out with stuff, and we've been talking and asking about some of these things and hearing some of the stories. And this is a big part of it. So they were able to kind of guide us, and between several different people, I think Jim and Norm, we were able to pinpoint which particular walls or which sides of walls, which are very really well engineered. I mean, these walls are double and have all the kinds of things you'd expect at a station.
Not anymore, they don't.
Well, they did, yeah. They had several layers on the outside for soundproofing and so on and so forth. So it was quite a job to get through just one.
Well, the first one, we were just basically tearing down walls, and you're the one who spotted it first. You saw a note in the wall.
Just to the right, like above a doorway.
Above our heads, actually. Uh-huh. You saw a piece of paper.
Yeah, it was as Kibbert was ripping one side of the wall back, and it was going to come down. It was a very large section, and thankfully it wasn't on the wallboard side, which was sort of our first stroke of luck with this.
Yes.
It was on a nail or stapled somehow to the insulation side. So as we pulled the drywall back on that one side, we were seeing the front of what looked like a document or some handwriting. Definitely not something you expect behind a wall.
Well, it was there, and we carefully pulled it out. It's it was a letter written on WUSB stationery, old WUSB stationery. It said, State University of New York, Stony Brook, Long Island, 11790, our old phone number, 516-246-7900, and then WUSB Radio 820. So this was put up there before we were FM. And the date handwritten on, December 23rd, 1970. So that's when the place was built. And basically it was a note saying WUSB Radio built Christmas 1970 by, and then a list of names. I'll read the names. Robert Messing, Norm Fruslin, who is still a vital part of our station.
Absolutely.
Former general manager. Sam Greenberg, Mark Kalman, Ed Goldberg, and Fran Munkenbeck. And they had various positions, general manager, music director, construction department, production director, ace newsman, and director of library. And that note was just there. It was just sitting there for all these years. We had no idea it was there. And you know what? It's lucky we did not find what we were looking for at first, because we never would have looked for the note then. We never would have known the note was there as well. So we found the note. We called Norm on the phone. He was blown away by the whole thing, that we actually were able to find that. And then gave us some hints as to where we might be able to find something else, what it was.
Or who else to ask.
Yeah, and we looked, we tore down more walls, or Kibrit tore down more walls, and then we found the second bit of treasure, and that was the Carpenters record that people remembered sticking in the wall. It was actually a record, a single, a 45 called Merry Christmas, Darling. Someone wrote 1970 on it. I don't think Carpenters were very popular because they stapled it. They stapled it right into the sheetrock, right through the vinyl.
They're probably getting sent a lot of records, or it was from a collection that was neglected, or somehow just it was something on the getting pushed around, and people were sick of it. So I,
know,
I feel
Carpenters,
like that was...
Carpenters were a little soft for USB, I think.
I see. Right.
But, okay, so we preserved that, cut the sheetrock out. It's still preserved in its original state, stapled to the sheetrock. So we have number two.
Joke's on whoever did that, though, because it's around now.
I'm just glad that we didn't hit that with a mallet, because easily we could have.
This was the second very, very lucky thing in that in all this demolition. We were going through a lot of sheetrock and creating quite a mess as the walls were torn down. And thankfully, yeah, we were feeling things out as we went, and very carefully looking for signs of relics and older items placed in the walls.
And then we found a third artifact. And this was a note written directly on the sheetrock. I'm going to hand you my phone because I took a picture of it. That's hard to read, and maybe you can make it out a little bit better. It's a strange kind of cryptic message that...
Unsigned,
and it gave an allusion to the rumored joint that might be in the wall somewhere.
Yes, it said, "Working toward a new world, WUSB." I don't know what that word is.
Hang on. Handwriting was not really our fine points. WUSB Construction.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Constructed this wall. In the wake of something birth.
People, you gotta write notes on walls. Make it clear.
It's not Christ's birth. No, it's definitely not that.
I don't know. Maybe Christmas, because it was at that time of year. During an era of, what's that word there?
Godlessness and grass.
Godlessness and grass. What?
This studio is wonderful.
Uh-huh. Yes. I don't know what you're saying.
I'm sorry. I'm still reading. And then it's signed 171.
Okay,
and
so that was January.
So, that was it. So working toward a better world, WUSB constructed this wall in the wake of Christ's birth, I think, or Christmas, or something with a big C.
That seemed to be the overall theme, that everything was done around the holiday season.
During an era of godlessness and grass, 171.
So we didn't see any grass, but a little bit later on, we found what appeared to be a small envelope on the next panel over, and at the bottom, like on the ground, and you know, a little tiny manila envelope that wasn't sealed and was empty. What I suspect might have happened was somebody might have put some grass in that particular envelope, and some rodent in the decades that followed found it, opened it, consumed it, and it fell to the ground. That's my theory.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? It's anybody's guess. But the spirit of creating something, and that someone in the future might be there to take it apart and move it into a different place, was
it was kind of cool to participate in the other half of that, or the ending of that, where we actually go back and find the stuff. So we're gonna encase it and share it, make it something that is a part of the station's history and that we can share with other people.
I was just so honored and blown away that we were able to be there for that moment, that final moment of the building, really, and find these things that were left there for us to find, unknown people in the future. And I just hope that all the people that were responsible for that find out that we found it, that we remember.
Somehow, some way.
So rest in peace, old WUSB, and the future lies ahead for new USB. And I'm so amazed and proud of this place, what the people here have done, what the university has done. We're building a beautiful new studio. Right now we're in a temporary studio as the big control rooms are still being built. It'll be probably a couple of months before they're finished. But it is an incredible facility. We're continuing to digitize the entire CD library. We're trying to save the vinyl, find more space that we can keep all that.
We collected a whole bunch of reel-to-reel tapes as well as cartridges.
Yes, old what look like 8-track cartridges, but are used by or were used by radio stations to play things from songs to commercials. It's old, but you don't want to just throw it out. You know, something might be on there that's no place else. At least have a way of playing it back.
Right. So we got the machines, too, which, along with reel-to-reel, like the old Ampex and other equipment
yes.
that was in okay or working condition that or we could use as parts, would be part of a greater archiving project to appreciate all of this incredible history that the move kind of forced us to go through it
yeah.
as a station and as a community. And people really have risen to the occasion to help out and to make all of that history something that's accessible to people who get involved with the station in the future.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot more people will be involved. I've seen more participation in the last year or two than I've seen in a long time, and particularly from students here at Stony Brook. And that's the key. That's the future. You know you're on the right path when you have lots of new people coming through the door being enthusiastic. And, you know, things like listening to the vinyl, going to the history, not just playing the new things, but incorporating the old into the new and trying to find new innovative ways to do things. That's how you make progress. You don't stagnate that way. And I've never been more convinced that WUSB is on the right path, and we are making progress, and we are growing and getting more and more people involved. So couldn't be happier. Couldn't be happier with that.
That's local. That's
local. Local is good. Local.
Local.
Yeah. I do like the local positivity that we have. Would that it were so for the rest of the country. No, you know, actually, I got to say, I spend the week being ashamed of being American. And then the weekends, I'm super proud of being American, you know, because during the week, you have basically Trump going through doing what we did to the walls of WUSB, except he's doing it to the country. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekends, everybody comes out and says, "What in God's name is wrong with you?" And you know, fills the streets and shuts things down. And, yeah, I realize that is the side I want to be on, the side of the people, the side of the voices that will speak out against injustice. And we are going to be very, very busy.
Yeah, and I guess that's because those people are working during the week, right? And then all the politicians and bureaucratic types go home to their districts or wherever on the weekend, and that's when everybody is having a nice conversation, shall we
yes.
say, in their constituencies, and hoping that maybe those members of the government hear them or see them out on the streets.
Well, we are in a state that I've never witnessed before, and I don't know where we're going to go from here. This country is in chaos. There's no other way of saying it. The Muslim ban has gone into effect and kind of caught everybody off guard. I guess they didn't expect Trump was actually going to go through with it, but he did. In fact, he even surprised members of his own party by not telling them exactly what he was going to do. And that's how you have people like his own press spokesman contradicting himself, saying that the word ban was never used when he was the one who used it, and Trump clearly used it. In fact, Trump even asked Rudolph Giuliani, how he could make a Muslim ban legally using those words. they're very bad at covering up their own misdeeds. And in this age of the internet and everything that is recorded, you can't get away with things like that. You just can't. So over the last couple of days, we have seen an outpouring everywhere from the mosque in Selden to the airports, everywhere around the country, to people here on campus. People are speaking out. People are outraged. And, you know, the acting attorney general was fired last night by Trump for standing up to him.
Isn't Loretta Lynch? She was the former attorney general in the outgoing Obama administration.
Right.
And this is Yates. What's her first name?
Sally Yates, I think.
Sally Yates.
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't know about this.
Laudable position, laudable action in speaking up and using the position to contradict something that is not the will of the people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Which is something you would expect our institutions to do, and that's why it's built in segmented or compartmentalized in different branches and so on.
Well, the thing is, Sally Yeager stood up to Trump. She was basically temporary until he gets the person that he wants that will say yes to whatever he wants. But she did not. She did not, and I think that's amazing. I did not know there was a temporary attorney general in place. I guess I just didn't think it through. But I certainly found out yesterday when she said this is not legal. You can't do this, and I'm not going to enforce it because it's not legal. That is somebody with integrity who stands up and says that. In fact, she was questioned. This is on all the news programs. It's just on Democracy Now. She was questioned by none other than Jeff Sessions, the nominee for attorney general, when she was being confirmed. He asked that very question. Would you stand up to the president if you thought he was wrong? And she said, yes, my duty is to the Constitution. Well, the guy that replaced her has no such conviction and is going to follow whatever Donald Trump tells him to do. And we have to assume Sessions will do the same thing. Everybody is saying he's going to be confirmed this week, which I find appalling that we can't stop this. Democrats are finally getting a little bit of courage. You know why? They're getting courage because we're leading them. People think the people we elect are the leaders. The people are the leaders. Those elected officials follow the people. When you have everybody massing in the streets and going to airports and raising their voices and tying up the phone lines, getting on the net, getting in people's faces, yeah, they're going to notice that and they're going to realize, yeah, I have to follow what that is.
That's why they show up at those things.
Mm-hmm.
They are obliged to be there, right?
Yes.
They are. The expectation is that they will go to where the people are, go to where the constituents are active, to listen and represent and take that back to their offices and to their work week in local and national government.
Yeah. And that's why they're starting to actually do things like boycott hearings and making it impossible for things to move forward if they're not there, infuriating the Trump administration, which is great. And that is what we need to be doing. If you might think your voice doesn't matter, but if you annoy a Trump official even for 5 seconds, well, that's great. You've annoyed that Trump official for 5 seconds. Somebody else will take the next 5 seconds, et cetera, et cetera. And they will be annoyed constantly. It will not stop. We all have that power, and I'm seeing people using that power now. It's long overdue, but it feels great to actually see it happening.
We have to keep it up. We have to be vigilant and stay on the logistics and the technical parts of this stuff, because they are, as you said, operating badly.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to cover up a lot of inappropriate behavior or lack of process or these sort of glossing over of how this is what is appropriate and how things are to work in our country, and we need to hold them to task on all of those steps and every part of the process, as well as questioning the integrity in general, because they're not really proving out to be the kind of administration that's going to be conciliatory.
No, they are not going to back down. They don't know how to say they're wrong. They don't know how to apologize.
Right.
And it's going to be ugly. It'll be a lot more ugly if we just back down and let them get what they want. We have to fight this every step of the way. And that I'm happy to see people doing that. We saw the Screen Actors Guild Awards, people speaking out against this kind of atrocity. We see elected officials here at Stony Brook. In fact, there was there's going to be a demonstration tomorrow. Is tomorrow February 1st? Wow. Okay, it's February 1st tomorrow, 6 p.m. At the Student Activity Center Plaza, the SAC Plaza. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I don't know that word. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. That's what the Statue of Liberty says. Tempest tossed. Wow. I never actually read it like that before. Anyway, show your solidarity. The USG, which is the student government here, the Interfaith Center, GSO, other campus groups and departments are all going to be there, or part of this, the Seawolf Solidarity Rally, tomorrow, 6 p.m. here at Stony Brook. We mentioned the rally outside the mosque in Selden. Did you know there was a mosque in Selden? It's a pretty awesome place. Days after President Donald Trump's executive order prohibiting entry of non-U.S. citizens from seven Islamic-majority countries, Muslims on Long Island say it is more important than ever for communities to stand together to prevent fear from being sown. And hundreds of people were there. Of course, you know, if you read the stories in Newsday, you will see all the hatred that follows in the comments section, as always. And I'm not saying ignore that, but don't let that dissuade you. There are a lot of ignorant, hateful people out there.
They're like bad drivers.
Yeah, and lots of times they are bad drivers.
Tons of them. Yeah, they're one and the same in a lot of cases. But yeah, that's fine. Get a dash cam. You know, you can make a mockery of them. But they're there. Be aware.
And they've been empowered. The reason you're seeing so many more of them is because they feel as if this is their time. What happened? The awful tragedy that happened in Quebec a couple of days ago, the mass shooting at a mosque there by a white supremacist, a nationalist in Quebec. Yeah, they exist there as well. Don't think for a second that Donald Trump does not bear responsibility for this. In fact, it was interesting. We were watching The National last night on CBC, which is the one-hour nightly news show.
And bless Peter Mansbridge.
Peter Mansbridge, yeah. He is their Walter Cronkite, except he lives forever, apparently. They had him standing outside in Quebec City for an hour, and boy, he was freezing.
Without a hat.
Without a hat. He's bald.
He's bald. Somebody should have given him a nice knit cap or something. I don't know. Maybe one of those big fur hats. I don't know.
He kept saying that the temperature is in the minus high teens. I think he was hinting that, you know, this is really not becoming behavior for a senior anchor. But he was out there, credit to him, interviewing all kinds of people about the tragedy that happened there. And at one point, somebody brought up the connection to Trump and how people feel empowered to do these awful things based on what they hear. And he said in this kind of aside, you think he has something to do with it, like Trump was driving the getaway car or something. But it's true. He did have something to do with it. He helps empower these hateful people to do these awful acts, and that needs to be acknowledged, and he needs to bear responsibility for that.
Think of all the excuses. It's the ideology, like, has all these excuses and all the house cleaning, all that energy to try to justify what policies and rhetoric and attitudes they feel are now American and a part of this movement, and conflating it with labor and jobs and so on and so forth. That's all beside the fact. That ideology, all that dancing around it, is easily deflated when you realize how wrong they are, right? Mm-hmm. They're you can't, I can't say this phrase, but, you know, you can't polish certain things.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's
like Trump. You can't polish Trump.
Yeah, you can't polish Trump. And
I think Trump should just be a synonym for the word you want to say.
Yeah. Well, it's Bull Trump. And
Ultra, I like that.
And
Wow. Oh, there's a lot we can do with that word.
I'm sorry, I changed the subject. I just realized... I basically said what I had to say, but it just strikes me that all that work, it's to prop up something that's illegitimate, that is an ideology we all reject. Any right-minded person, anyone who is a person of the world. I think that's what Peter Mansbridge was saying, is that, what parts of the rhetoric, what parts of the ideology do you think contributed to this?
Right.
Because it did.
The way Canadians will deal with this, I think, is a lot saner than the way Americans would. Somehow in this country we'd use it as an excuse to get more guns, because we always just use anything as an excuse to do that.
Because we wouldn't dare associate anybody's words and actions and beliefs with this any more than we would guns, which is stupid.
Here, it's a sickness that we have, unfortunately. That was the first mass shooting in a year. We have one a day, I think, if not more.
And we don't do a lot for mental illness.
No.
So there are crazy people out there.
But, let's not mistake this and say the person is crazy. They're not crazy. They know exactly what they're doing.
Well,
Dylann Roof was not crazy.
That's true. Put in an adjective, crazy nationalistic, gun crazy. They have their specializations, but that's what I meant. Not maybe... like someone who's lived with an illness or had some sort of mental health issue their whole life and that they deal and struggle with. I'm talking people who are out there looking to blame others for choices in their lives, things that have affected them, maybe tragedy they haven't dealt with, or addiction and other things that then rear themselves in hatred and people, blaming what has affected them on their outward environment.
Well, in Canada, I feel they're dealing directly with the hatred, with
head on
how this happened to us. The thing is, they have lots of guns in Canada, so people could do something like this fairly easily. It's not that complicated to go on a shooting rampage, and it does happen, unfortunately, in other parts of the world as well. But they don't seem as obsessed. They don't seem as obsessed with violence and stocking up on ammunition and combining the two. So when something like this happens, they take a good long look at what are we doing wrong, how can we fix this without changing who we are. And I think they're very good at that. Yesterday they had solidarity rallies everywhere from Toronto to Vancouver to Iqaluit. Up in Nunavut, people were gathering in support of the Islamic community in Canada. And I just thought that was really moving. And they're going to get through this. They're going to get through it become stronger. And more welcoming, because when you look at how Canada has dealt with our changing world, they are welcoming refugees, and we are fighting to keep them out. It's just so disgusting seeing our attitudes towards these people who have been through so much. It's seeing the pictures of them being welcomed into some European countries and having many, many times more refugees being resettled in Canada than in the United States, a country that has done its bit to create refugee crises in so many places. It's embarrassing, and I only hope that we continue to fight so that that is a part of our history, a bad part of our history, but history all the same, and that we will change the future and welcome these people.
And not be so ignorant.
No.
Not be so ignorant and simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
And jumping to conclusions, thinking the first sign of something that fits a narrative of that's rooted in hate and blame, as opposed to looking at these things practically and removing the emotion from it and really confronting the sources of these things and not supporting leadership that creates more of this turmoil.
It's interesting watching the press conference. There's a daily press conference at the White House, and it's really entertaining to see because Sean Spicer is just so agitated all the time and is always attacking reporters. It's horrible, but it's also must see TV. But one thing he did yesterday, which just astounded me, he referred to the it was a terrorist act in Quebec. And he basically used that as justification for the Muslim ban. The Muslim people were the victims here.
Yeah.
How about a ban on white supremacy? How about a ban on people in the White House that preach things that lead to this? You know, it's a sickness, and it's not being dealt with. And you're looking at the wrong people as the culprits, and just creating more victims in the process. It's really disgusting.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, you summed it up. I couldn't really twist my mind around, do the mental gymnastics to come up with exactly how they used it as an excuse for their ban. But if you look at the story, that's absolutely not the case. People in a mosque praying, being shot in the behind, from behind, and in the behind, I guess. And it just completely overlooks and jumps way ahead to meet this ideological goal, and it's wrong. It's disgusting, and here we are listening to it.
Yep. Sunni and CUNY student leaders actually issued a statement a little while ago. On behalf of the 1.2 million students who attend the State University of New York, known as SUNY, and the City University of New York, known as CUNY, we, the duly elected students, representatives of our respective student bodies, are calling on our elected officials to take action against the discriminatory executive order issued by the President of the United States. CUNY was created out of a strong commitment to the unique needs of a diverse urban constituency comprised of individuals from across the world looking to enhance their knowledge and experience through higher education. SUNY rests on a foundation of commitment to opportunity and access and was designed to meet diverse needs across a vast geographic landscape. Our organizations will be sharing in a call to Congress Day occurring Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. Our federal officials need to hear how directly this issue affects our students. We have the responsibility to act on behalf of those who cannot act for themselves. We have the responsibility to come together and stand in solidarity with our colleagues looking to pursue their education in a safe, welcoming, and inclusive environment. We, along with our dedicated student leaders, are committed to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and we will stand up for justice and equality and for the most fundamental freedoms that define American greatness. We're seeing statements like that appearing everywhere. This just came out this afternoon. We all need to make a statement. We all need to be vocal about this. I think we're seeing a lot of that.
Yeah, that's not unique. Mm-hmm. That perspective, that is the norm. That's the majority. So, when people say we won or try to do all that work to justify the administration that's coming in, just remind them how many different people and institutions are expressing what is right,
mm-hmm.
what is just, what does make this country great, what makes us unified, what about our country makes people describe it as a melting pot, makes people think of it as an open and welcoming place, something that many different people come to for a lot of reasons, and mostly the same reasons that we hold so dear, life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. We all deserve that, and we feel as though others deserve that as well here. So
we're seeing it all across the country and all across the world, and I'm proud of that. I really am. That's what I mean when I say it makes me proud to be American to see this kind of response. And it's like we said right after Election Day, it will be judged in terms of the reaction to what's going on, and we're starting to see that now, and I just hope it doesn't stop.
Yeah, and they're not going to be able to ignore it for very long. I mean they will, and they have tried. You basically have seen, since the Women's March, complete denial, deflection,
mm-hmm.
and basically the administration ignoring this. But it won't stop.
No.
That attitude is widely shared. It will be with them every day during the week in the halls of our government,
mm-hmm.
and it will be with all of the institutions and companies and people that are wrapping themselves around this agenda, trying to walk that line and so on. And ultimately, this administration will have to answer for their actions and for their words. Now their actions and their words, and they're going to try to just keep their heads down, try to keep just forcing things through, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it will get worse because they will get a lot of what they want. They will probably push Sessions through this week, and then we have an attorney general in place that will act on what Trump says. And that can be very, very scary. That can be a lot of bad precedents can be set.
But the one important reminder in light of how serious that is that we remain peaceful and vocal and stay on the right side, the just side, the moral side of this argument, of this perspective, because you know, violence and direct action has a lot of intricacies, and we need to be very, very careful to stay free.
Mm-hmm.
In this context.
Yeah.
So one reminder there.
But, you know, on that subject, people can only be pushed a certain amount before they react in a violent way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you have literally tens of millions of people who are being oppressed or not listened to, completely ignored or dismissed, at some point it will break. And that is something that we cannot just pretend isn't going to happen.
As I said, intricacies.
Yeah.
There are intricacies to direct action and to how things evolve, but this is action and work that people are doing every day, and you're a part of that too.
Yes. I renewed my ACLU membership the other day, and apparently a million other people did the same thing, which, you know, it's great because they showed up at the airports. They actually had to buy plane tickets to get through sometimes just to meet with the people who were being detained. And this is the kind of spirit that we need, and we will see plenty of, and it'll really be very inspiring. You know, it's not just the government people, though, who are spouting a lot of this hateful rhetoric. A lot of our fellow citizens are doing the same thing. Again, no free passes. We can't just let it happen. We can't just turn a blind eye when something unjust or unfair is done or is said. We got a letter, actually, from something we were discussing last week. I'd like to read this. I was listening to the show this past week and noticed that several minutes were devoted to a discussion of a sign that was posted at the entrance of an ice cream parlor in Port Jefferson, which read, "In Trump We Trust." While I certainly do not agree with either the content or the sentiment of that message, I do not believe it should be treated as a controversial thing. In my opinion, we are taking our eyes off the ball by expressing outrage at things like this. The guy is just expressing his opinion. If you don't like it, don't buy ice cream from him. I feel that something like this really does not even deserve any mention on your show, since all the discussion does is increase the divisiveness. The time and energy spent going off on this guy and his sign would have been much better spent talking about the many really dangerous and damaging things that the new Trump administration are doing. That's actually from our own Bobby Nero here at the radio station, who you can hear Saturday, alternating Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. And, you know, let me address this, because I don't think we did a good job really explaining why this was so outrageous. It's not a guy running an ice cream parlor that says, hey, this is my opinion. That's fine and good, even if it's a outrageous opinion. You know, this was a sign at a big intersection that implied that the entire town felt this way, because there was no sign of the ice cream place attached to it. There was just a huge banner at a big intersection that said, "In Trump We Trust." That is it's the outrage there, because, you know, if we had put up a banner saying something negative about Trump or positive about anybody else, you know, it would have been a big deal. We would have been hauled in front of a judge or something. And this is just an abuse of the power that this person has. If you're going to express your opinion, do it in the context of whatever it is that you are running. If it's an ice cream stand, okay, you have a sign at the entrance to the ice cream stand, but you don't have it, you know, for the whole town to see, implying that this is the town speaking. That is what was upsetting about this. And, you know, I think we've spent plenty of time talking about the other dangerous, damaging things that the Trump administration was doing. But that's why it's important.
To which there is no shortage of. And we, yes, as limited as we are, we try to cover all of these things. And gosh knows how much dust or whatever else was complicating our explanation of this stupid, stupid sign. But it is right at an apex. There's also a ferry that comes
in. Yeah, it's
in
the first
there.
Thing people see from Connecticut when they get here. Oh, my
it's
God.
It's basically like, you're in Trump country.
Yeah, and you're not. And we have to make sure people realize that they're not.
Yeah.
One other very quick story, because we're almost out of time here. I just saw this the other day. An Austin cable news reporter covering a Capitol forum on Islamic terrorism on Thursday asked if Texas lawmakers have any plans to stage meetings focusing on radical Christianity or Judaism extremism, too. It didn't go well. Former Republican State Representative Molly White from Belton, Texas, said, "How dare you say that? How dare you say that, you lowlife son of a bitch?" And it's all on videotape. Like I said, annoy them. It does pay off. You know, it shows a hypocrisy, and it gets their blood boiling, and that can't be good for them. All right, you know what? I mentioned we were digitizing all the CDs. All the CDs. We're talking 100,000 of them. It's taking a long, long time, but we're doing a good job. It's fun.
I'm sick of it.
Yeah, I'm sick of it, too.
So sick of it.
But we found one the other day.
ODing on radio station.
Yeah, we are, pretty much. I found one the other day that actually did not go through. So it basically, Gracenote is a service that your CD will access to see if the song names, artist name are listed, and then it'll attach that to the files that it creates when digitizing. In this particular case, it did not find a match. That's because this was a homemade CD. And what we do in cases like this is we bring that into the station and have it manually done, so nothing actually gets tossed. But the note in here, I think, needed to be focused on. Enclosed is a copy of a peace song which I wrote and recorded. And I should mention this note comes from July 1st, 2003, so it's been sitting around for quite a while. This person says, "I thought the station would be interested in considering it for airplay. Coincidentally, I'm an alumnus of Stony Brook, and my daughter currently attends the medical school. I also had one of the first radio shows on WUSB in 1965, a folk show." Can you believe this? Back then, we reached G and H quads, which are two dormitories next to the Student Union building, and that's all the station reached in the carrier current days. This is from... I can read the handwriting. David Fish, I believe. Hang on, it's printed over here. David Fersh, F-E-R-S-H. I figured, you know, what a good way to go out for this particular show than to play this song that comes from someone who did a radio show on this station, 52 years ago? And before we even went FM. And a protest song, a peace song, that can apply to today, and something that will be soon a part of our permanent CD library.
Or digital library.
We won't
use CDs in the future.
I guess not.
There'll be things we talk about wistfully.
Yeah.
And compare to vinyl, but anyway.
Yeah. I don't know how wistfully we'll be talking about them.
Not us.
Yeah. But in any event, so that's what we're going to go out with today. It's called Dangerous Days, and that really applies, doesn't it? You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. And here we are. Welcome to our new home. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
The weasel's in the hen house, spreading terror and fear. And if somebody don't stop him, there'll be blood everywhere. Dangerous days. These are dangerous days. In so many most important ways. Dangerous days. Remember, Buzz got that evil rabbit in his shotgun sights. It ain't a matter of rights, but just a matter of might. Dangerous days. These are
their bank accounts. Believing happiness is worth dangerous days. We're living dangerous days. Freedom comes at a price we'll pay to end these dangerous days. Must be fought for today, or far more dangerous days.